You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 2nd of November, 64% of S&P 500 companies have reported earnings 19% better than a year ago and just 2% below the record from Q4 21. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Lonwabo Ngqakabela is from Perpetua Investment Managers, MTN and Vodacom. Yo, I hadn't looked at those charts in a bit. Man, they're under pressure. Is there some value there? Sinisha Pakrasami from Momentum Investments. The budget policy statement of yesterday, genuinely, I think, not bad. Certainly, the Rand liked it. Of course, making speeches in Parliament is one thing, actually implementing, different story. Charles Savage from Purple Group, they introduced a Thrive loyalty program yesterday that could see many users paying 25 Rand a month for their platform. The world was in uproar. We will get his view on that. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. South Africa eyes exiting the grey list by 2025. Finance chief says good progress is being made. Business Day, motor industry dismayed as state support of green vehicles stalls again. Industry hoped for details of government's plan to support production of new energy vehicles and got no joy. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1.1%, NASDAQ up 1.75%. Over in the east, it's green, Sydney up 0.33%, Tokyo 1.1% higher. Commodities mixed, green is gold, 1,993, Brent is green at 85.50, PGMs red, platinum 936, palladium 1,123. Rand 18.54, Bitcoin 35,710, 1.1% higher in Hong Kong. And top 40 looking for 200 point open. That's about a third of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Lonwabo Ngqakabela. He is Perpetua Investment Managers. Lonwabo, appreciate the early morning. MTN had their Ghana and Nigeria results out on SENS during the course of the week. And I was reading through and I went and had a look at the charts of MTN and Vodacom. And prices have been under significant pressure in both cases. I suppose the question is, I mean, is there some value starting to creep in here, or perhaps extreme value, or are these price sell-offs perhaps justified?
Hi, good morning, Simon. Yeah. I mean, it's quite incredible to think that, you know, how reliant we become on those businesses, and so obviously to see their share prices, it's quite a juxtaposition. But I guess for both of them, obviously in South Africa they've reached maturity. We can see it in the low, the level of growth on the service revenue. It's kind of low single digits for a couple of years. There's still some penetration growth to come from data. So as people still kind of get more smartphones, but the challenge is the pricing. We've seen some significant deflation in pricing for data. So naturally, they then both actually looked to Africa for growth, which ironically in local currency does materialize. The challenge is that when you translate that back into rands, and this is true for both Vodacom and MTN in Egypt and Nigeria respectively, where the currencies have effectively lost half their value relative to the dollar in the last couple of years. And so when you actually translate those earnings back to rands, you actually don't get that growth, so the high local currency growth doesn't transmit. And I guess the challenge is that telcos are regulated by nature, and so as the countries experience inflation, the tariffs don't adjust accordingly, or at least timely enough. So you then get this margin squeeze that tends to happen over time. And they also have, a meaningful portion of dollar operating costs and dollar capital costs. So then that mismatch really does destroy value.
And that CapEx is real. I used to call these sort of companies utilities, but they're not, because, I mean, they're busy rolling out 5G and 6G is coming. There's just a constant large CapEx bill.
It doesn't stop.
never ending, and to the point it is, yeah. It is dollar based. It is absolutely no fun. They will leave that there. That's from Robin Cabela, Perpetua Investment Managers. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you have a preference? Do you like perhaps both, neither, either? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and X.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Sinisha Pakosami from Momentum Investment. Sinisha, appreciate the early morning medium-term budget policy statement yesterday. Perhaps a little better than expected. Certainly the Rand liked it. There was revenue shortfall. We kind of knew about that. There were some spending cuts, no SOE bailouts, perhaps some new taxes next year. I suppose the question is, I mean, does it deliver that fiscal discipline that is so hugely important for our country's economy and for confidence?
Good morning, Simon, and so lovely chatting with you again.
Now, as you rightly point out, there is a significant need for us to be able to rein in the fiscal deficit and to be able to stabilize the debt ratio. And it's not only for South Africa. If we look and take a step back, and we look at what the International Monetary Fund has warned about in their latest World Economic Outlook and Fiscal Monitor, they warn that debt remains elevated around the world. And they also warn that borrowing costs, which we know in the South African context is also true, is rising at quite a clip. And they note that there is this requirement to engage in more prudent fiscal policies, because having prudent fiscal policies means that we will be able to rebuild fiscal buffers and to be able to mitigate against unexpected risks. But at the same time, to have fiscal policy that's also in alignment with monetary policy that's tightening in order to allow central banks to bring inflation back to target again. Now, in South Africa's case, there were substantial cuts made on the expenditure side, 154 billion, which I think needs to be commended given that we are in the run-up to an election year.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, relative to the size of the expected revenue shortfall over the next couple of years, it meant that we are still going to be sitting with a wider deficit. But again, to government's credit, if you look over the medium-term framework, they are penciling in a primary surplus, which is, of course, very necessary for us to be able to. And so they've kept the year at which we're expecting to see debt stabilizing the same, excepting that the level of the debt ratio is going to be a little bit higher than what was initially envisaged.
I mean, that was absolutely my sense. I mean, this really was a somber a statement, but a truthfully a bit encouraging one. I suppose the challenge, however, it's one thing to stand up in Parliament and present. It's going to be the implementation which is going to be hard. And you mentioned, and it truthfully, I was surprised, I suppose. We've got an election next year, and yet the minister seemed to not be concerned about that. I mean, he really does seem to think that he can do this, and we hope that he can.
Now, I think a number of boxes were ticked in terms of what needs to be, you know, prepped for in terms of an election year. So generally speaking, I think the market was expecting no announcement at all on the social relief of distress grant.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an announcement that this would be carried out for one more year at a cost to the fiscus of 33.6 billion. Now, the social relief of distress grant is important for about 8.5 million people in South Africa that are part of the working age population but don't have any form of income. And that's about 350 rand per month. What government has also alluded to, and this was in the back pages of the medium-term budget policy statement, is if you had to take the social grants and you extend it all the way into fiscal year 2040, then that social grant aspect of the budget starts to grow to about 3.8% of GDP, which is exceptionally meaningful. And that means that if we have a permanent extension of the social relief of distress grant in some which way or form, maybe with fewer recipients or a lower amount, it does then have to be matched with a more permanent revenue stream. And I think going into an election year, they were unwilling to really tackle that. Similarly, with regards to Transnet, which is now the next big elephant in the room after Eskom, again, quite close to being, you know, the election year. Again, we didn't really see much in terms of how they're going to resolve the funding crisis at Transnet. That said, you know, even though they are cutting expenditure so significantly, if you look at the social aspect of the budget, which includes things like education and labor and housing, that still amounts to over 60% of the non-interest expenditure. So that's meaningful. And that tells us that the government is still committed to making this a redistributive budget.
A last quick question. It's sort of hints, singles, signaling around some tax hikes, but relatively modest. I mean, certainly not VAT. I mean, probably personal income tax. I mean, the number I kept seeing bandied around was about 15 billion. That's relatively modest.
You know, Simon, I tend to agree with you there. I mean, they have said it's going to be modest tax proposals, and that kind of hints to the market that it's not going to be your big sort of ticket items on new tax measures. Mm. And again, you know, speaking about it being an election year next year, it's going to be very difficult to increase, for example, the value-added tax rate without making meaningful concessions on, you know, zero-rated goods. And then, of course, that takes away from the amount of money you can collect from that VAT increase. So in my mind, I think they'll probably be targeting something around bracket creep, so not fully compensating people for inflation. And I think you can get, you know, to the order of about 12 to 14 billion, perhaps, from that bracket creep aspect, potentially a little bit more on sin taxes. So I think they'll tinker a little bit around and see where they can get a couple of billion. But I don't think they're going to really target new tax measures. I think that would be too brave a move for government, especially in an election year, and would be largely unprecedented. We haven't really seen major tax moves in an election year before.
Yeah, take your point. A little bit of bracket creep solves most of that problem. We'll leave it there. Sunisha Pakrasamy, Momentum Investments, appreciate the early morning.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in StanLib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Charles Savage, CEO of Purple Group, of course, their own Easy Equities. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Purple Group. Charles, appreciate the early morning time. Last week was Easy Equities' 9th birthday. I remember back at launch, democratizing investing. Somebody with $100 could own China's largest tech platform or their favorite retailer. And it was disruptive in the true sense of the word. Now you've introduced a Thrive initiative. If I jump some hoops, no fee. If I don't, it's 25 Rand a month. For me personally, the process would be easy. But I think for a lot of folks, perhaps those with only $100 or something, it gets harder. I mean, have you gone against that promise of what you started, that promise of democratizing investing?
Morning, Simon. And yeah, thanks for having me on. No, I don't think so at all. And maybe it's just worth, since you noted the birthday, it's worth reflecting on what we've achieved in 9 years. I mean, you know, you were around, you watched us, you were competing with us, I guess, at some point. But I mean, we started with a single mission, which was to democratize access to South African shares. And we made it really simple for South Africans to go out and buy their first South African shares. And then fast forward, and that's all you could do on the platform. Yeah. You know, it was a one trick pony, and it did it very well. And on the back of that success, though, 9 years later, we built a platform that allows you to do so much more. I mean, you can literally buy the world, you know, European shares, UK shares, US shares, South African property, crypto. You can do it in a managed way. You can buy unit trust. And the list just keeps going on. There's FX transfer services, et cetera. And so, and in that journey, we launched Thrive 4 years ago. So, you know, the one point to make is Thrive is not new. It's been around for 4 years. And Thrive was designed, it was a free loyalty program, which was designed to drive investor behavior and then track to see whether that behavior created good outcomes. So, i.e., people who thrived, were they better investors? And, you know, 4.5 years later, we've looked at the data and said, look, the best investors on the platform, those that get the best outcomes for themselves, those that are on track to retire and achieve their financial goals, are the ones that thrive. And so a year ago, we started working on what are the fundamental changes. And a loyalty program is always a carrot and a stick. You know, if it's just carrots, then, you know, only donkeys who want to eat carrots will go and eat them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we needed to create a stick and a carrot that was sufficient enough to try and modify the broad population of users so that they all became good investors. And again, I want to be clear on this. This is the starting point of those changes. And what I'm loving, and I think people are going to find this surprising, is I'm loving the engagement we're getting out of the ones that are enjoying the changes and the ones that aren't, because there are lots of clients who are loving it. And as you've seen on Twitter, which seems to be the place that, you know, most of the disgruntled users are sitting, there are people who aren't enjoying it. But the important thing for us is that we knew this would happen. You know, you can design these things in boardrooms, which we have. We've chatted to customers. We've engaged our partners, but you're never going to get it perfectly right. So the engagement we're getting now will no doubt lead to modifications in the Thrive program. And, you know, and those modifications will be better in the outcome for everyone. So there might be behaviors that we haven't engineered or that we aren't tracking that should give rewards to customers. But to your point on democratization, you know, our commitment remains. We invest all of our time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, in building the world's best investment platform. At the same time, our income statement confirms, and our financials will be out again, you know, this month, we spend a lot of money doing that. You know, on average, about 5 million rand a month in delivering this platform and products to the market. What we're asking customers to do is, if they want to retain the same cost profile, and in fact, a better cost profile from the platform, all they need to do is spend less time or money, so they can do either of those two things, than they would on a cup of coffee once a month. And so I think it's a fair trade. We're spending all of our time, all of our money on ensuring they get the best, safest, secure platform in the country, in the world, in fact. Mm-hmm. And we're asking users, all you need to do is pitch up and spend less time or less money than you would on a cup of coffee, and you retain that. In fact, it gets cheaper. So, you know, I saw the Moneywood article this morning, which was very balanced. You know, if you deposit 1 rand a month, you avoid the fee. And why do we care that it's 1 rand? Because 1 rand is not going to change the game. The important point is, we want users to think about Easy Equities every single month, because if they think about it every month, it's front of mind. That's going to drive further engagement. And that's why I must tell you that this Twitter storm, if you like, which is the only place that there is a storm, is very productive. Because what I would say to the Twitter users, if you spent all of that energy that you spent in the last day, and you divide it by 12 months, you would have thrived every single month. And so I think over the course of the next couple of, you know, days and weeks, one, the program will listen to customers and we'll modify the program. But two, I think when the dust settles, people are going to realize that actually the program is designed to deliver better results for them. And it doesn't exclude anyone. Everyone's got the ability to either pitch up for a couple of minutes a month, i.e. no money, or two, deposit 1 rand and avoid the Thrive fee. And in so doing, we get the opportunity to engage with them at least once a month and make sure that we're front of mind.
And I take your point. And let's be clear, the Twitter storm is there because people care. And in truth, that matters. Does this become, I mean, you must have run some numbers and the like. I mean, this platform, as you say, costing you 5 million a month. Does 25 rand from the customers who don't step up once a month and either pay the money or watch some videos, or as the case may be, does that become a significant revenue stream towards that 5 million?
You know, the truth is, we don't know. You know, what we're hoping for is that everyone thrives. That's what we're hoping for. But I think that's an unrealistic result. And so I think it will be a meaningful revenue stream. But again, people will be able to see this in the months ahead. The money that it produces, this is not about improving our income statement. The money that it produces, we want to spend on the community to drive further behavior and engagement. So the program is designed to, if you like, self-fund the loyalty aspects of our platform, which are all geared at driving positive behavior. So it's going to get reinvested in the customers, even the defaulting ones. So as I'll give you an example, you know, if let's just say this month that, you know, that 100,000 customers don't thrive, what might be our approach next month? Well, next month we might say to them, look, guys, we understand that November was a busy month. December, you might have more time. So why don't you make a deposit this month and you can get back your Thrive fee? And so there are a lot, and that's just, you know, I'm not saying we're going to do that, but we will be doing activities like that. And the whole point of the program is to get, is to drive people's behavior. And any money that we make out of the program, we want to reinvest in that those same consumers, the ones that thrive and the ones that don't.
So it's a bunch of questions and ideas, and I'm not going to credit people because my Twitter account was crazy yesterday. Some users said, what about small accounts? So say someone has got 30,000, if they can't afford the Thrive, if they don't do the activity, they're effectively paying 1% a year, $300. That's bog standard industry fee. What about making accounts below 30,000 exempt? You've exempted under 21, you've exempted over 64. What about under 30,000?
Yeah, I mean, of course that went through our minds. You know, the minute you put exemptions in around a value number, I think you start to break your democratization message. You know, in the same way that, you know, for the low value investor, we went and engineered fractional shares so that everyone could buy a part of NASPAS. So we don't want to give exemptions around value. We think everyone can find the time or R1. That's the truth. And until that's proven wrong, then maybe we'll create other exemptions. So there's, as you've noted, let's talk about the exemptions we have created. Why did we exempt young investors and older investors? And the truth is, we know the 21-year-olds, you know, are more focused on their education and other things and don't necessarily have access to regular cash flow. Don't penalize them for that. On the other side of the coin, you know, the 65-year-olds, hopefully they've achieved everything they need to do to thrive, and they don't need a loyalty program to get there anymore. And so we can't, and changing their behavior, it's kind of too late. You know, so they've got what they've got.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we find other pockets that, and we haven't found any ourselves, but if customers come up with other ideas around exemption. So for example, I think there was a journalist that was moaning about it. And my response to her was, I tell you what, if you publish an article about investing that I could use and publish to my investors every month, and they read that article, what happens if I exempt you and those that read the article? And, you know, that was deemed a good idea. And I like that, you know, so we're thinking about other exemptions. They've obviously got to be easy for us to track because we don't want to create a system that is difficult to track because that costs money. Those the other ideas, but I don't like segmenting users based on their value because that says that a lower value customer has got less time or less capacity to invest in their own journey, their own, goals and aspirations. And I don't think that's true. I don't think money is a definition for what we can or can't achieve.
Okay, may I take that? It's a good point. The big question, everyone was asking this, if they don't have the money account, does Easy Equities then sell shares to cover the costs? From your support on Twitter, it seems the answer to that is yes. And then the question that everyone's saying is, but hang on a second, then who owns the shares? My response to that is, I mean, probably read the mandate. I mean, the client owns the shares, but if they're in negative, you will sell.
Yeah, so let's go back a step. Firstly, if a client owes Easy Equities any money, because there are lots of places that where fees can accrue, and we wouldn't be able to collect them because you're fully invested, the platform has always had the right, and all investment platforms do, to recover fees from your assets. And in the unit trust world, this happens every single month. You know, you pay your advisor's fees. How are those advisor fees collected? They sell your unit trusts, and the same happens with share platforms, etc. So it's always been in the platform. What are our intentions with this fee? Well, the first thing was to say that we're only going to try and collect the fees twice a year, I must say that our intention is not to sell your shares. So we're giving you 6 months from the last time that we recover fees to recover those fees for yourself, either make a deposit or sell the shares that you want to sell, or receive dividends from your portfolio, because that'll automatically pay the fees. And so our intention is for users to look after how they want to pay the fees. And if they don't pay the fees, then we have the right to collect those fees, and always have in our platform T's and C's, to recover that from their portfolio. The intention is not to, though. But again, we can't predict, users might pay all the fees for themselves and will have nothing to collect. It might be a very small percentage of offending clients who haven't paid, and we might make the decision to say, you know what, roll it for another 6 months. And so I want to be clear on this. Our intention is not to sell their shares. We've always had the right to do it, but we want to see how this plays out. And given it is the one point that I've been really close to on social media, it's a valid point in the sense that customers don't want us to sell their shares. Yeah. Well, I want to be clear. I don't want to sell their shares either. And so let's see how it plays out, and let's work together to see if there's a better alternative to selling their shares.
Another question is, what about tax-free accounts? Because, of course, there's a chance here that on the 1st of March, I put my $36,000 in. I can't add money now.
Yeah, again, we thought about that. So, you know, tax-free savings is one weapon in your arsenal to, you know, retire safely. And so we've got lots of other weapons. We've got US accounts, you know, South African accounts, properties, easy crypto. And so our answer to that would be, well, start doing something else. You know, if you've got the ability to make that single deposit in 1 month, it probably indicates that you've got the capacity to do more than just that. And so whilst 36,000 tax-free savings account, you know, that's a, you know, congratulations and well done for doing it. Not many users do it, but we think there's ability for you to do more. Again, let's see how that unfolds. You know, for example, an RA account is exempt from this. So if you've only got an RA with us, it's exempt. But, you know, the reason for that is that RA account has a fee structure associated with it. So there's a, you know, a wrapper fee that is associated with it. So, you know, for now, tax-free savings accounts are included. Again, we're open, we're listening, and we'll see how it plays out, and we'll listen to users. But for now, you know, our message is find something else to do on the platform that helps you achieve your financial goals faster. And given the fact that you could deposit 36,000 once off, I'm pretty sure you can make a contribution once a month to something else.
You're telling me to find another 11 rand over the course of the year. Point taken. Start date, last question, starting end of November.
Yeah, so the first date is end of November. And, you know, another important point, so that we've been criticized for the communication. You know, the communication is day one communication. So that's the first level of, we've got 30 days of planned communication and engagement in different places. And so what customers have seen is just day one. The first fee run will be on, you know, the 30th of November. I know we noted that it was going to be the 31st of November. Yeah, we obviously know something that everyone else doesn't. There's obviously another day in the calendar. But yeah, you know, the point is, over the next month, we will unpack this and listen to our customers more. And the first fee run will be 30th of November. And, you know, what I would say to users is keep sending your complaints, your concerns, constructive criticism. Tell us what behaviors we've missed that'll make it easier for you to thrive. And with the real point is, as long as that behavior is positively contributes to your investment knowledge and it creates and is easy for us to track, we'll support it.
We'll leave it there. Charles Savage, CEO, Purple Group. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were discussing cash as an asset class with Sean Nesling from Morningstar SA. We asked if you keep cash in your portfolio. Over half of you said, yes, you keep a little. A third said, hey, you keep a lot of cash. The rest of you said, nope, cash is boring. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and X. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Renegen.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.